Hi, I'm Cam, and this is the Nerd Book Review. Today, I'll be reviewing Reign and Ruin by J.D. Evans. I'll give you the book info real quick. We'll do the book cover, which hopefully Chris will once again do. And then I will give you my take and the review. Let's get started. All right, let's give the author bio real quick, and then we'll do the book stats. So, J.D. Evans writes fantasy and science fiction romance. After earning her degree in linguistics, J.D. served a decade as an Army officer. She once spent her hours putting together briefings for helicopter pilots and generals. Now she writes stories, tends to two unreasonable tiny humans, I can feel that one, knits, sews badly, gardens, and cultivates Pinterest fails. After a stint in Beirut, J.D. fell in love with the Levant, which inspired the setting for her debut series, Mages of the Wheel. Originally hailing from Montana, J.D. now resides in North Carolina with her husband's... J.D. now resides in North Carolina with her husband, two attempts at mini clones gone rogue, and too many stories in her head. Okay, let's get to the book stats. The book is 420 pages long. It was first published in January of 2020. It won the SPIFBO Award for Best Fantasy Book in 2021. It is the first book in the Mages of the Wheel series. Several others already out. I believe maybe the fourth one will come out shortly. Hopefully Chris read you the book cover, but in case I have some issues with the new software that I'm about to try out, I will read it myself as well.
"Is beautiful," she said, "and terrible. Do you not see the beauty in yours or the terror in mine? You can stop a heart, and I can stop your breath." She is heir to a sultanate that once ruled the world. He is an unwanted prince with the power to destroy. She is order and intellect, a woman fit to rule in a man's place. He is chaos and violence, and will stop at nothing to protect his people. His magic answers hers with shadow for light. They need each other, but the cost of balance may be too high a price. Magic is dying, and the only way to save it is to enlist mages who wield the forbidden power of death, mages cast out centuries ago in a brutal and bloody war. Now, a new war is coming. Science and machines to replace magic and old religion. They must find a way to save their people from annihilation and balance the sacred wheel. But first, they will have to balance their own forbidden passion, his peace for her tempest, his relentlessness for her calm. Night and day, dusk and dawn, the end and the beginning."
Hey, that is a great synopsis of the book in the review. I will go ahead and give you my quick take. A Middle East-inspired novel with a heroine who wants to rule in a male-dominated society who is helped by a man despised by her people. So, man, that book review, the book blurb that is on Goodreads, really opens things up and describes things very well. My initial thoughts on the book itself, I absolutely love the book. It is now my favorite of the SPIFBO winners. It might be a fantasy romance novel, but it certainly isn't a Harlequin romance. The world building is top notch, and while it is definitely character driven and not particularly action packed, I really did find it hard to put down. The first day that I started reading it, I actually had a few hours. I got about a third of the way in, and it was bedtime, and you know what? I just decided to read a little bit longer. Stayed up about 20 minutes later than I should have. When you have to get up for work at 4 o'clock in the morning, it feels very, very early. But I did it anyways, and so obviously, if you stop listening to it right now, I clearly enjoyed the book. All right, I think the best way to break down this book is first to describe the world, then the magic system, and then the two point of view characters. So the world as we know it, there was once a unified sultanate It is now two countries in the south and then the republic in the north. We have Tamar, which is where magic originates and is the one that still is far more powerful magic-wise than Sarkhum currently is. The break happened a couple hundred years prior to the story taking place. So as I said, Tamar is where magic originates and their mages are still very powerful. It doesn't seem like magic is on the wane there, except for the two sides of the wheel that were broken off. I'll tell you more about the magic system and the issues with that as I get into the magic system. But Tamar, magic, Sarkhum, it broke off from Tamar. The rebels did because the Grand Vizier, who's like the head of the council, who advises the Sultan, but currently in Tamar is more powerful because of some issues the Sultan is having, where he is an air mage and he has a certain ability that I'll describe more later that also caused him to now have a little bit of dementia. So sometimes he's lucid, sometimes he's not. So the Grand Vizier definitely has a lot of power, especially since the heir to the current Sultan is a woman, Naimi, who we will talk about as well. She's one of the point of view characters. But anyways, back then, the Grand Vizier was a death mage, and they were being purged from Tamar. So they had the Civil War. I assume that the North broke off. It's not really described very well, the relationship with the North, or like if that's when they broke off or what the situation is. We just know that the Republic in the North uses technology. They have a very powerful army, a mundane army, obviously. They kill any mages that they get their hands on. It sounds like they just kill anyone from Tamar who happens to go into their areas, whether they use magic or not. So clearly a very antagonistic position versus Tamar and Sarkhum with the Republic. So Sarkhum is in the east. Kind of think of him if you're thinking of our world, where, say, the Sultanate was the Ottoman Empire. Sarkhum would be like the old Persian lands, I guess, if you will. Off to the east, they're going to be dealing with steppe nomads as kind of their main, the way that they sharpen their swords, if you will, and keep their skills sharp with their mundane army, who seems to also mostly be horse warriors. So Tamar, lots of magic, still very powerful with the four elements that they currently still have. Sarkhum, magic is dying off. It is not as powerful there. And so they rely on a very powerful mundane army, as I said, that is in constant conflict with the kind of think of like a much weaker version of the Mongols that they fight off on the borderlands on a regular basis to keep their army strong. And then we assume the Republic would be like the Europe, if you're thinking of it on a map. But in this book, there's not really any details given about the Republic. So as we are, Tamar and Sarkhum have no relations when the book starts. The story is basically about an attempt by Naimi, the heir to the Sultan, and the one who's kind of trying to gain power in a man's world, and Makram, who is the brother of the king, the Sultan of Sarkhum. He is a death mage, as the blurb says, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get in. But anyways, as we have it, also Sarkhum is dealing with a crop blight, so they're in real bad shape. They are going really, realistically, despite what their irrational ruler says, they're going to have to choose one of the two, because they're not going to be powerful enough on their own pretty shortly to stand up to the Republic, because the Republic is an immediate threat, and the magic that Tamar does have, especially the brother of the Sultan being a very powerful death mage, is certainly something that's holding off the Republic, but won't for too much longer. Let's talk about the magic system, which I just loved. I love the way it's set up. It is just done in such an amazing way as far as I'm concerned. So you have six magical houses. They are put on a wheel, is the way they're described. Let me describe the six houses real quick. So you have air as the first house, water as the second house, creation is the third house, earth is the fourth, fire is the fifth, and destruction is the sixth. You can also be born with no magic. There are plenty of people, I assume, in Tamar that don't have magic, but almost everybody that we're going to deal with will have magic. So I guess we can assume that at least with bloodlines of the nobility and the important people, that most of them have magic. I don't actually know what percentage of the population in Tamar would be considered magical. It is definitely much lower in Sarkum, and there are a lot fewer people who don't have magic. It sounds like when we meet even like Makram, who's the brother, and he's this powerful death mage, his bodyguard of like six people, only half of them can use magic. So I would assume that it's a lot lower if even an important person doesn't have a full retinue of them in Sarkum. If you're born with magic, there are levels. You have Aval, which is the weakest, so you can only cast simple spells, and you have to be able to speak the spells in order to use it. The next level is called Daval. They can speak spells or use drawn runes and sigils to cast more powerful and complicated spells. The level above that is Sival. They can speak, draw, or even think their spells, and they can use more complicated magic. Those are the most common mages, but they become like less common as you rank up in power. You are born with your rank. You don't train higher to become it. We're not talking the progression as the story that we'll talk about in our next episode after this one. So you're born with the ability that you're going to have, and that is that. The highest level is called Chara'ah. They're only born once in a generation. There's only one per house living at a time. They're born to parents of the preceding house, and it's a kind of like a random mutation. So, for example, Makram, who's the death mage, he has two fire mage parents. And so then the air Chara would have two destruction mage. It's the way that the wheel works. So a water Chara would have two air parents, etc. Those the Chara'ah are meant to, they are a bridge between the two. There was actually a council prior to the breaking apart that was actually the ones that really ruled and advised with the Sultan, and the Grand Vizier and his council was a lot less powerful and wasn't super important in the same way before they started purging the Chara'ah, starting with the Death Mage. Now, your opposite side that you're aligned with, they kind of cancel each other out. So air and fire or water and fire normally would be against each other, but there can be some mutations here and there. So Naimi's cousin is an ice mage. It happened as a result of something that happened to him, but he would have been born in the water. So now he is very weak against fire because he's an ice mage. But if he was a water mage, then he would have been like the opposite against it. So because destruction or death mages have been outlawed, there's also no longer any more life mages as well. So they're the ones that would be able to heal, would be a life mage. But there are no life mages because there are no destruction mages in Tamar. Now, it's the way that it's kind of described and the way things are, they break down. It is a lot of world building that's going on all at once or throughout the entire story. We even have some points where they're in like libraries discussing. I'm a nerd for this. There's really no other way to describe how I love a good world building scene, or just an entire book that can be that way. I am that guy that has read the companion stuff for the Wheel of Time multiple times. I will read I've even gone through the dictionary thesaurus version of that, and I will do it multiple times. I have the Song of Ice and Fire, or Game of Thrones, if you will. I have all of that coffee table book companion stuff. I just love world building if it's done the right way. And that's what this is. There's a ton of world building. I mean, we're probably 30% through the book before there's a lot of action. So that's something that I just need to get out there. That if you don't want world building and relationship building, to play huge roles within the book, then it's something that this is not the book for you. There's just, if you want a whole bunch of action and battle scenes, then this is definitely not the book for you. But if you love world building, then it is something that I really liked. And I got right into it. From the very beginning, I enjoyed it. I think I was a page or two in when I got into that movie in my mind, and I had a hard time. I hated to stop and write notes while doing this, while reading this book. I did not want to take those breaks and do the things I needed to do for the podcast. I just wanted to keep reading, and I didn't want to stop and have to go back and look at things. In fact, I started after a very short while just taking screenshots of pages that had important stuff so that I could go back and write my notes pretty quickly in order to not have to take breaks. That's how much I enjoyed the world building and what was going on with the book. Now, there are a couple of sex scenes, which is important to note. So that's something that if you don't want or don't like, then that's not for you. There's also, there really aren't more than a few battle scenes either. So there's not, it really is about the relationship building and the statecraft that we get to learn about. We learn all about the two kingdoms. We don't learn as much about the Republic, but I guess we find out more about them in other books. It sounds like each of the books focuses on a relationship with two different characters each time. So that's something that we don't see, or that I imagine we'll see in other ones, whereas the two characters here will play much smaller roles. We have the world building, the world, and the magic out of the way. So let's get into our two point of view characters. We have Naimi. She's an air mage. She's the daughter of the Sultan of Tamar. She's a Sival, so she's that one level below the Chara'ah in power, very powerful air mage. She also has a lot of really good control of her magic, so she's powerful even for that level. So Naimi, as I said, is the daughter of the Sultan. Traditionally, only men have ruled, and if there's only daughters, they're married off to like the most powerful of the nobles, and they're just supposed to be a figurehead. Her family has ruled Tamar since before the Rift. He was a very powerful air mage, but he's got dementia now caused by using his specific power. So there can be like specialties within each one. He was what was called a Verator. He could actually touch people and then get their memories. So if there were criminals who'd done something especially bad and they wouldn't admit to it, he could go in their minds and see if they really did do something bad. But this is also very dangerous and has a tendency to cause dementia in Verators as they get older. Now, the more you use the power, the more likely you are to become or to have dementia. So right now, Naimi is trying to become a ruler in her own right, but she is running into resistance, obviously, because she's a woman. And her father, who wanted her to be a ruler, he thinks that she's capable enough. He's starting to just lose it at times, especially at some very inopportune times. She is dealing with issues with the Grand Vizier, Kaden. I apologize. He's a fire mage. Fire mages are very temperamental by nature because of fire, I guess. He is intelligent. He was once her father's best friend, but her father ended up marrying the woman that he loved, and he is now very much not on the family side. His son is who he would like Naimi to marry. His son is a jerk and a drunkard, just not a good dude. That is obviously an issue for Naimi, who doesn't want to marry a jerk. And the Grand Vizier would really just like to take power for himself. If he thought he could murder Naimi, then I'm sure he would do so and rule with a coup if he thought it was something that he could get away with. The council, as a general rule, doesn't particularly care to have Naimi, who is a woman, ruling. Everyone generally agrees that she's capable and would be a good ruler if she was a man, but once again, she's a woman. So she is going to have to deal with the scheming. She's also going to have to deal with her father's dementia, and he's getting worse and worse as the story goes on. But she truly does care about her kingdom, and she wants to. Her real goal is to unify Sarkam and Tamar under her rule, because she thinks that magic will get better that way. Oh, we're going to take a quick break. I'm at the end of a row, and I'm going to get in a new one. And I'm back. So in our opening scene with Naimi, she is trying to deal with this Grand Vizier and the council, and she has told everybody that she has sent an envoy to Sarkam to attempt to start negotiations. The council is outraged at this because there hasn't been any attempt to reconcile for the entire last couple hundred years. It is what it is. And they don't really think that the Republic can defeat their magic. They think that they're too powerful, and they don't really care what happens to Tamar, or what happens to Sarkam, sorry. The Republic will just wipe out the mages in Sarkam and then ally with their ruler and have their army, which is obviously powerful enough to be a stalemate with Tamar, and then they'll wipe out Tamar as well. Now, she has to do some political maneuvering in order to try to do this. This is also where we find out her father, the state of her father's illness, because he kind of foils her attempts to do this. And that's kind of where the story will go. Now, the person on the other end of this, the other point of view character, is Makram. He is the brother of the ruler of Sarkam. His brother is a fire mage, a very weak one, but he has all of the hubris and issues that fire mages can be prone to. He is very jealous of Makram, who is a Chara'ah, as I said, that most powerful of all mages. Makram is a death mage, so even his own family isn't very happy about that. While death mages are not automatically wiped out in Sarkam, obviously, they are still not well-liked and they're feared. It obviously helps them to have him as the leader of their army, though, because traditionally the brother of the ruler is the one that rules that runs the army. So he's in charge of the armies, and because of his power, they're doing a very good job of, you know, keeping the nomads away, and they're also scaring off the Republic as well. But Makram can be impulsive on his own, and he also believes that the Republic is getting powerful enough to wipe out Sarkam, and he thinks that the entreaties that the envoy that Naimi has sent, although he thinks at the time it's just from the Sultan, he thinks that they need to ally with them. His brother forbids him from going, but he does it anyways, takes a small group of his men and an officer with him. And he meets with Naimi. He is immediately believes that she's incredibly competent. She's beautiful. And she is a wise ruler as far as he's concerned. And the rest of the story is going to be about their relationship unfolding, both as a couple and as potential rulers of their kingdoms. And I think that if we get too much farther into that, then we're going to start being spoilers. But basically, that's what we'll know is the important thing. We have the world, and the Republic is the antagonist in the north. Tamar and Sarkam, who have been enemies for hundreds of years, and the rulers of those two magical kingdoms in the south, or at least the potential rulers of those two kingdoms, now trying to unify them and dealing with those people within each kingdom who don't think the Republic is enough of a threat, or if they are, they don't care and they don't want to reunite. And that's basically the whole rest of the story. Like I said, we're not going to get too much more in depth in those two, other than that, I guess as we transition right now into the how do we make us feel, then I liked both point of view characters a lot. I thought that Naimi was incredibly well done. She is the daughter of the Sultan, but she's not a simpering fool by any means. She is incredibly intelligent, incredibly shrewd for her age, and she really does care about what's best for the kingdom of Tamar, and she is not a brat. The elder statesmen are the ones that are more of a brat and more don't seem to care more about their own power than they care about the kingdom as a whole. She's a great character. Makram, the death mage, is also a very sensitive man and is a wonderful foil aside her. And I thought both characters, you know, they weren't spoiled nobles by any means. They both had a lot of responsibility from a young age, and they handled that responsibility well. The story really is all about the moves and counter moves of the council and first Naimi on her own and then Naimi along with Makram, especially the council in Tamar and their feuding with Naimi. So it's basically just a lot of intrigue and whatnot with some action thrown in here and there. And as we get about 2/3 of the way through the book and then far later in the book, there are a couple sex scenes, as I mentioned. Those are important to mention because it's probably something that you're not going to want your younger kids to be reading. As I mentioned, I loved the world building. On the how did it make us feel, I really did care about the characters. It wasn't a tearjerker by any means, but also, like I said, I liked the characters and I rooted for them to succeed. And there were times where, you know, you genuinely don't know what's going to happen. There's not crazy twists and turns or anything like that. I'm not trying to pretend there are. But the story unfolded in a different way from where I expected it to, especially when you first read the description that it's a fantasy romance. I don't think that you expect it to be quite so in-depth. It was in-depth. The romance was definitely, for me, I thought something that felt like a magical fantasy story that just happens to include a romance between the two point of view characters as the book rolls out. Obviously, on the whole, would you recommend it to other people? There's people that I wouldn't recommend this book to as much as I loved it, but if you don't mind a sex scene or two, if you like world building as an important thing, and you care more about a character-driven story than an action-driven story, then this is obviously something for you. On a 5-star rating, I'm giving this one that hard 5. There is zero chance I'm not reading the next book in this series, and I'm actually going to be here pretty quick, a couple books up, and I think that this will be the next book that I read will be the second one in this series. There are books that I'd be more than happy to pay for, so that's something that, you know, to note that a lot of times I continue getting arcs. That's something that that I always ask for, just in case anyone is under any question. When I'm doing a book for a review, all of my books, I'm getting arcs for free as a general rule, unless it's the very, very biggest of authors. But even then, very frequently, I've been able to contact the publicist for these big Tor, Orbit, Penguin, any of them, and they'll be happy to give me arcs to review. So, hard 5, absolutely loved the story. I feel like, if anything, I haven't done a good enough job of talking about just how much I loved this book. It's something that I just had such a hard time putting down, and I think it was the lowest rated of all of the Spiffbo winners so far, and I can totally see why that's the case, because if that's not your thing, if you don't want any sex scenes in your books, then that's going to knock it down a notch or two. If you're also someone who wants a little more action than this book has, then that's something that could knock it down or two. I didn't bother going back and looking at any of the ratings, but I'll bet that there are a bunch of 10s or, you know, 9.5s, and then one or two 5s or 4s that for someone that just did not care for the style and that really knocked it down. I'd have to go back and look at the scores to, you know, to be sure that's right, but that's kind of what I have a feel for what is the case on this one. But if you like that character-driven story, then it's something that, you know, both the characters are really likable. There's nothing that made me, you know, no brattiness, nothing at any point that they don't need to be broken down and then brought back to becoming characters that have that are redeemed in any way. They both start off strong, and so I don't care necessarily for a character-driven story where the character starts off as a real jerk and has to be rehabilitated. That's not my thing. I like my characters to, you know, to be strong. Even if they're not good people, I like them to be strong right away. I mean, you know, a couple of my favorite characters in all of fantasy are Yorg from Mark Lawrence's trilogy, and he is just an absolute bastard of a human being, but he's powerful and strong from the very beginning and driven and does, you know, what he thinks is right. Another fantasy series that I recently talked with the author again, my favorite character of all time is Ruka, and he's just an absolute bastard of a human being. I mean, his first scene, he's eating another person, but I still like him because he's powerful and strong from the very beginning. I don't need my people to be good. I just don't need them to be stupid people that then have an epiphany, if you will, and these characters are strong from the very beginning. Once again, the main audience and who should and shouldn't read it is usually the last thing I go into. Obviously, not a lot of kids probably need to be reading this. It's more of an adult-themed novel. Anywho, now the closing thoughts. Loved it. We'll be reading more in the series. The next book that I'm going to be doing for the next episode is The Umbral Storm by Alec Hudson. He is a 2-time finalist for SpiffBo. I absolutely loved his first series. The Crimson Queen was the first book. I kind of thought of it as a series where if Lanfear from the Wheel of Time was the main character, if she had been the focus instead of Rand and his band from Edmund's Field, then I feel like that's kind of what that story was. Also, I always joke that it's also like the book that if Robert Jordan had written it and then not included descriptions of chairs and rooms that no one was ever going to go into or sit in. And so those books are, you know, 400 or 500 pages long instead of 900 like Robert Jordan's were. Not derivative, but I just loved them. That's kind of what I considered the closest to it. And this one was that Alec is doing as a progression novel, which I am told is all the rage these days. Not my thing. Loved the book still, but it's something that I have to talk about my feelings on the progression genre. On to the last little bit. You can reach me at nerdbookreview@gmail.com if you have a question or concern or would like to submit a book review request. You can reach me on Facebook on the Nerd Book Review Facebook page, on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days. The handle is Nerd Book Review. No the in any of these. It's just Nerd Book Review, as well as Instagram, Nerd Book Review, although mostly on there seems to be pictures of lakes and me reading at a lake. So I hope you all enjoyed this episode. I can't recommend this book enough, and I hope you all have a wonderful week.